Yeah, not in the mirror.
So why is Muto's name in, like, a different color?
Because he's just in one of the breakers.
Can you put in different font sizes, like how much contribution they
make? You can't see, but see it.
Well, I don't know where Justin and Andrew are, but I think we should.
Justin is on the phone.
Oh, no. All right. Well, we'll just go ahead.
You cannot call me.
When you get to the throat, they will appear.
Right. Yes. We're very pleased to have you on Zavala today. She did her PhD at Cambridge with another photo, as I just learned. She's now at Perrin at the Institute for Particle Physics and Phenomenology, as we all just learned. And she's going to talk about spin inflation.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. And I will be using this pointer as opposed to that hockey thing, because it's big for me, and also everyone is at the back, so I can really kick you if you are sleeping or something. Okay, so this is a work done in collaboration with Stephen. So first of all, I want to explain the title, and by spinflation, I just mean inflation with angular momentum. And more specifically, I want to discuss this in the context of D-brain inflation, and still more specifically in the context of DBI inflation within string theory. So very general motivations for doing this. I think more or less everyone knows this. On one hand, we have the inflationary paradigm, which has been very successful nowadays. However, it's still in search of a theory. On the other hand, string theory is very successful, also nice mathematical description, but it's, there's no experimental test of this theory. So it is natural to ask if string theory can actually provide the fundamental origin of the inflaton field, and then provide inflation being like a test, say, for the physical reality of string theory. So I'll be talking about D-brain inflation, and in this scenario, an open string field, an open string is considered as the inflaton, in particular the brain positions or the brain distances, if we have two or more brains, are identified with the inflaton. So more or less we have a picture like this, where you can have, string theory has 10 dimensions, so you compactify usually in something which is called the Calabi-Yau. And so you have some brains, which may be V3 brains, which have four infinite dimensions. Or you can have higher dimensional brains, the brains, which then can wrap in the internal manifold. So this is unworked, as I will explain now. So you have something like this picture in your mind. And there are two ways in which you can, people have looked at the brain inflation. One is slow roll inflation in the brain scenario. This is a standard slow roll that everyone knows. And this was first discussed by Valli and Tai, and having two D brains, and then has been generalized further, and also using new ingredients which have arisen in the last year, like fluxes and so on. And the other possibility is to realize D brain inflation in the context of DBI inflation, which I will explain later on, and this was proposed by Silverstein and Tong. And so this is the kind of scenario I want to consider in this talk. So in this case, you consider what is known as a warped compactification, in which you have some fluxes in the internal manifold. So before we had something without these funny throats, and now the fluxes introduce this warping and these funny throats. So basically, this is the kind of picture I want to concentrate on. So again, you can have V3 brains, which look like points in the internal manifold, but you can also have higher dimensional brains, which then wrap some cycles in the internal manifold. And then the difference is that here you have some internal fields. Okay, so DBI was stands for Dirac Bohr-Infeld inflation. And in this scenario, what you have is, you consider the DBI action, which describes the dynamics of a DP brain. This action contains some non-standard kinetic terms for the positions, for the scalar fields that describe the positions of brains or distances. And this then gives rise to a speed limit for the brain motion. Now, if the brain moves in a warp background, as the one I just showed before, these kinetic terms combined with this strong warping can then give rise to accelerating trajectories, as we will see. And therefore, this is a stringy scenario which can have interesting predictions. That would be the hope. Okay, so the original DBI scenario proposed by Silverstein and Tong was done. So they considered the dynamics of a D3 brain moving in the radial direction. So if you imagine having a throat like this, then just consider the D3 brain going up and down this throat. And they considered this in an ADS 5 process 5 background. So there was only this type of flux, where N counts the amount of flux. And so the metric, ten-dimensional metric, has this form for ADS 5 process 5. H, the warp factor, is just given by this. And here we have all the quantities. So the DBI action has this form, this gamma for here I'm talking just always about the D3 brain. This has the induced, this gamma is the induced metric, and I won't be considering any term here at the moment. There's also an extra piece, which is called the Vesumino part, which is just the coupling of brain to this form.
Ignore that F term.
It's okay. I mean, you don't have to. This includes the B field, the background B field, and also a gauge field on the brain. So the B field actually for the background I'm going to consider is actually zero, the induced one, and you don't want to put any extra gauge field. But yeah. So here I just defined all the quantities that appear here, and the string coupling and so on. So this Q is just the charge of the brain, so I will mostly be considering Q plus 1, which means the brain, as opposed to an anti-D3 brain. So if you put all these ingredients together, you end up with the Lagrangian, which has this form. So basically, all the DBI action enters here. Here, you just imagine having a one. And then you can see that there's a speed limit coming from this piece. So rho here is, of course, rho dot is just the velocity of the brain as it moves in this slot. So it is clear that there's a speed limit. So first of all, you can consider brain trajectories. So simply look at the Lagrangian, the equations of motion coming from that Lagrangian that I just showed, and therefore you can define some conserved quantities, conserved quantities, the energy, and is given in terms of this gamma factor, which is like a Lorentz contraction factor. It's defined in this way. And you can look, all the trajectories can be obtained from this equation for rho dot. So as you can see here, all the there's only one type of trajectory, right? This is always positive. So trajectories are indeed very simple. And if you want, the brain is just, if you start with the brain coming from infinity, it will just go towards the rho equals zero, which is the place of a horizon. But okay, so brain is just moving like this. Okay, so let's now couple this to gravity. And then you have what the DBI inflationary solutions one. So you just considering coupling this action to four dimension, I mean, four dimensions to the Einstein-Hilbert term, then you end up with an extra, well, with this Planck mass, which is related to the six-dimensional volume. This one's this point here. And now, from the four-dimensional point of view, this rho is now, you can see it as a scalar field, which with adequate definition. So as you can see here, due to the speed limit, when the warp factor becomes very large, this becomes negligible, this as well, this is becoming going to zero, then all these terms become negligible and therefore the potential can dominate. Now this potential I have included here, as was included, this is coming, it's not, hasn't been calculated, just takes a suitable potential. So it is clear from here how the DBI type of inflation works. And in this case, as you can also see, there's only one field, so it's a single field type of inflation, but there's no slow roll conditions involved. That you should keep in mind. So there's no slow roll here, it's more general than that. So it's a warp factor combined with the non-standard kinetic terms, which gives rise to inflation.
Can you just go back to the last slide? So that that form of the action without the potential is Lorentz invariant in without the potential. But then if you add the potential, it's not Lorentz invariant anymore, in the sense that you're breaking the Lorentz symmetry in the phi time. Let's say if you have only phi and time. Mm-hmm. So then why is that form as special anymore? Because I mean it is like spectrum. You don't have Lorentz symmetry anymore. So that,
in the 4D?
No, in the 5D. I'm talking about the phi and time. Forget about the spatial dimensions. Forget about the spatial dimensions, just the three.
So, it is fine.
I'm just talking about the space of phi and time. Phi and t. So everything else.
Phi, you mean the scale? This
scale, yes. Right? So you have Lorentz invariance if there is no V of phi, but then if you add V of phi, there is no Lorentz invariance because, okay, so maybe we can talk about this later.
Since you remind me, that's good, because now I want to take as a 4D metric, the metric of Friedmann-Robertson model, because we want to study cosmology. So in a way, what we are doing is trying to take into account the back reaction that this brain has, and the only way we can do is by doing this. So this is like an average in the back reaction of the program. Okay, so let me just continue with this. This is just the Silverstein tongue example. It's a simple example. So if you consider this potential, just a mass square type, you can see what they found is a power-like inflationary solution. And what they found also is that in order to have enough inflation, of course, we are seeing you want h phi dot square to be close to 1, meaning that the gamma Lorentz contraction factor has to be very large. This is the feature of this type of inflation. And it turns out that if you analyze all the constraints,
the non-Gaussian entities are very large, so they impose actually a bound on gamma. This has to be less or equal to or around 17 or so. And also, in order to have enough inflation, as contrary to what you have in slow roll inflation, the potential has to be steep. So there's no flat potential. In this case, it has to be steep. And you also need large values of the field phi. This comes from, if you define the acceleration in this way, you can see that in order to have inflation, this epsilon has to be less than one. And that parameter, which should not be confused with the standard slow roll parameter, this turns out to have this form. So this has to be less than one, and therefore the field, the values of phi have to be large. However, there's a bound that you need to impose for consistency. So if you actually compare the size of the volume of the whole manifold with the size of the throat, this imposes a bound on the actual values of phi, the chain of half phi can be. And if you remember, this n is the amount of flux. And it so happens that in order for the supergravity solution to be reliable, you need this n to be large. So as you can see, you can't have this. You can't really fit this. And also, usually, this gamma turns out to be much larger than this in order to get enough inflation. However, this was just a simple model. And in general, we have six compact dimensions. So the brain in general moves in six dimensions, and therefore you in general will end up with a multi-field type of cosmology. And so one can wonder what, in particular in this type of throats, what are the effects of for cosmology of considering the angular motion. And also they considered just the case of ADS5 plus S5, which is a nice model, toy model to start with. But you need to consider a more realistic setup. And so the question is if by improving on this, can you actually improve the model? OK, so this is where spinflation enters the picture. So in what follows, I will consider a more general compactification, flux compactification, which is the Klebanov-Strassler compact case, as described by Gittins, Kakron, Polchinski. And I will again take a Prof.D3 brain, which is moving in this this geometry, but not only radially, but also along angular directions. Then first I will consider the effects of the angular motion for the brain trajectories themselves, without actually worrying about the gravity to start with. And this can be interpreted as a mirage cosmology. And then by coupling to gravity as before, we will see what actually spinflation can make. So besides the five-form flux that we had before for the ADS5 geometry, now the Klebanov-Strassler throat or geometry has a solution in type 2B, which has also this type of fluxes, internal fluxes. The 10-dimensional metric turns out to have this form. And you can imagine it. So the Klebanov-Strassler solution by itself is not compact. You have something of this form, which eventually you will glue some compact manifold here. But let's forget about that. And so the geometry has more, you can imagine it to be something like this, like a cone, which is smooth at the tip, and which has a cis base, an S3 times S2 kind of topology. This internal manifold is known as the deformed conifold. And the work factor now is slightly more complicated. This M now is the amount of 3-4 flux. And this function is an integral. So it can't actually be solve analytically, but it's easy to work numerically with it. And in fact, if you do some numerics, you can plot this function. It has this form. Okay. So now we are imagining having this warp throat, this warp geometry, and instead of just leaving the brain going down and up, we allow it to also move along the angular direction. So again, the Lagrangian that describes this is given in this form. And what I have there, yeah, M I just defined in this way. And but now, so besides the radial velocity we had before, now we have some extra bits, right? Because the brain is moving not only radially but also angularly. And but still we have this speed limit. So the brain trajectories, if I concentrate only one angular direction, can be also studied numerically quite easily. So you can define the conserved energy and conserved angular momentum associated with this angular direction. The gamma factor gets some extra piece coming from the angular momentum. And the brain trajectories are described by this equation. So if you compare this with equation for a point particle of mass m equals 2 and zero energy and effective potential equals to minus this, you can actually solve it. And indeed, it's easy to solve this numerically. And because there's a minus sign here, you can see that this allows for open as well as closed trajectories. So in pictures, you can imagine you can also solve this numerically. And what happens if you just look at the dynamics, what the brain is doing, so happens that you can have these open trajectories or bouncing brains coming from infinity, for example, then it will be, there'll be a point where it will, it's a turning point and the brain just goes back. There are also other type of trajectories like this, which are just closed trajectories, cyclic brains. And also because the throat is as smooth as the tip, you can also have this type of trajectories. So from a mirage point of view, and the mirage cosmology is simply you look at the induced metric of a brain which is moving, a probe brain which is moving in a static background. This induces time dependence, and then you can identify an induced Friedman equation. But you are not taking, you should remember, you are not taking into account the back reaction of this brain. You're just looking at the induced time dependence. And so, in fact, if you look at this, you can see that because there's a minus sign, you can have bouncing as well as cyclic type of universes. So when L is equal to zero, you can also have some bounces. This was discussed by McAllister. And so here you just defined these quantities as required. And as I said, you can have your bouncing and cyclic trajectories. So, okay, so now we want to actually look at the cosmology, and therefore we need to include the back reaction or gravity. So as before, we proceed and couple this system to gravity, and we want to look at the inflationary trajectories. We want to know what happens to those brain trajectories from the four-dimensional point of view once we take gravity into account. And what is the effect in particular of the angular motion. And of course, we want to improve the previous scenario. So we want to know if this angular motion can relax the previous constraints that we had. So more generally, we have a complicated Calabi-Yau with some throws, not only one, but there can be many of them. There are brains wrapping some cycles, and we have our D3 brain, which is moving in all these roads, down the throat, and angularly as well as radially. And of course, we want this throat to be, well, we will consider the Klebanov-Strassler type of throat. Okay, so so again, as before, we have the four-dimensional action with this gravity coupled to this previous system. Now we have not only one field, you can have in general six fields, Mn, we're going from 1 to 6. And again, we have a potential, in principle, a potential which depends on the six fields, but in what follows, we consider that the potential depends only on the radial field, the radial field. And so as before, we have this quantified, and again, I consider the four-dimensional metric to have a Friedman-Robertson-Walker form. So you can actually study all the cosmologies, the trajectories, the cosmological solutions, but by looking at the equation of motion for phi dot, which is given in this way. And you have a Friedman equation, which takes this form, and now the energy is related to this gamma factor, again as before, but you have an extra piece coming from the potential. Then you have your pressure, again like this. And I will take, again, mass square type of potential. The gamma factor, again, has this form, but now we notice an important difference with the case without gravity, and that is that the scale factor appears here and here. So as you can see, there's a suppression of the angular momentum coming from the expansion, I think, as expected. So just one thing quickly mentioned, that the energy conditions are clearly satisfied, and therefore there are no actual bounds and bouncing of cyclic cosmologies by themselves. But there are there can be cyclic and bouncing trajectories, meaning that the brain can actually be doing this in the throat. The angular momentum terms, as I just showed, is damped due to the cosmological expansion. However, it can provide a source of acceleration, meaning that this epsilon can become less than one thanks to the angular momentum. Now, if you work out this epsilon in this present case, it has this form, and it is not very evident from here. But once you have the angular momentum turned on, because phi dot decreases, this epsilon actually as a whole thing decreases as well. So actually you get some extra bits, more acceleration by turning on the angular momentum.
But that's
kind of
the
version,
right? So,
exactly.
So it's only
so at most early times, and as you say, yeah. Of course, near bouncing points, the brain will experience some kicks of acceleration. Brain has to accelerate if you're changing directions. So if there are any bouncing trajectories or cyclic trajectories, of course, every time you go around, you will get some kicks of inflation, perhaps. So this is more like a speculative, you can have a multi-stage type of inflation. So just to illustrate what happens with and without gravity. So you look at the trajectories with no gravity for the field, for instance. They are just oscillatory, as I said. But once you turn on gravity, this gets damped, as you expected. And here you can see that there are kicks of acceleration.
Are you plotting A or A dot?
Phi and T.
No, the bottom right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dot, just to see that there are some kicks of acceleration. So this you can do numerically. Okay, so the accelerated solutions. So once you do the analysis numerically, you can see that here is lower of A, that you, once you turn on angular momentum, which is the blue, the curve in blue, you get a couple or a handful of extra e-folds. So you actually get a bit more of inflation by turning on the angular momentum. And one can check that h squared goes to at late times when L is equal to 0 goes to 0, but in general it's not going to be so because there's going to be a term that behaves like this at late times. Again, in order to have enough inflation, you need your gamma to be large. You need this also to be large, that is a steep potential and also large amount of flux, which is okay with the supergravity constraints. Now, at the end of inflation, well, gamma becomes small. So more or less, you can look at the trajectories of the phi with t, and most of inflation happens when the brain goes, the first time goes down the throat. The first time, all the inflation happens, and then it just starts oscillating around the tip of the throat. So you can imagine also that, well, the end of inflation happens because gamma becomes small. And then you will have to work out a mechanism to actually reheat the universe, and then this may or may not be done through oscillations around the tip, or you may put an anti-brain at the tip and then, you know.
What is it?
L squared, phi squared.
Is there any reason to expect that kind of potential?
Well, it's just not really. You will have to calculate, but this is what you may expect as the first. Okay, now the consistency bounds. So there are several theoretical consistency checks you have to do before you can actually say that this inflationary scenario is working. So first of all, you need to check that the acceleration of the brain is small in string units, or in other words, that the use of the DPI action is okay. And this turns out to be fine for in all cases, so that is fine. Now, the supergravity approximation is good when you have small curvatures, and this implies that GSM, GS the string coupling, and M the amount of flux, has to be large. So this you need to be sure that in a given solution you have, you are satisfying this. And also GS has to be less than one. There's another important constraint which comes from considering the back reaction of the brain, that probe the brain. When you have a probe the brain moving close to the speed of light. So remember that we have gamma is becoming very large. So that means that inside the square roots that we have, the brain is actually moving very close to speed of light. So you may wonder if that is not going to back react strongly on the background itself, and then you can't trust your solution. So if you can do this analysis quite in a simple example, and what you find is that the gamma factor has to be bound by this GSM square. Now, because the supergravity approximation tells you that this has to be large, this apparently is okay, because you need the gamma large, so as soon as you take this very large, seems to be okay. However, gamma happens to grow very quickly, and second, which is, this is like a generalization of the, what Bauman and McAllister did. If you compare, you need to check that the total volume of your six-dimensional space is actually bigger than the size of the throat.
So if you do this for the Kleonov-Strassler case, you end up with a constraint for this this GSM and for the size of the throat. So it so happens that once you start actually playing with these two quantities, it is not actually easy, and it's actually quite difficult to find the solution, I mean, space, parameter space that actually satisfies the two bounds and that gives you enough inflation. So in this respect, the angular motion can help a bit because the angular coordinates don't enter here. However, it provides a little bit of help, but not enough, if you want. Okay, so what we can say regarding the cosmological perturbations? As I said, the main contribution of the angular motion comes at the beginning of inflation because of the separation. And however, the perturbation in this spin flaton, if you want, may have some consequences, perhaps. Of course, it was shown by Silverstinton and Ali Shaya that, in the case of just single field DBI inflation, the non-Gaussian contributions become non-negligible and actually maybe too large. So once we have more angular momentum, we have a more general situation in which you have a multi-field type of scenario with, moreover, non-standard kinetic terms. So you besides having non-negligible non-Gaussian entities, you can also have non-adiabatic fluctuations.
The potential So this potential, maybe I missed something. So it comes from the work factor.
So what you say is that because once you take into account the moduli stabilization and the coupling to other sectors, there will be a potential for sure. What you can say is let's start with taking this potential to start with. But eventually you would like to, it doesn't come just from the.
So because phi is related to the radial distance.
Okay, so once you have, in this case we have two fields. So as is done in standard
two field models with slow roll and everything, you can redefine your field coordinates to align along with the inflationary trajectory. So this is some known picture. So you can define new variables in this way. Well, this f has to be d theta theta. And so you define your sigma and then s. So you define a trajectory along the, say it's a curvature trajectory, and then, at the adiabatic one and non-adiabatic one, or entropy direction. And if you have more fields, you can actually define more entropy directions. So you just make a change of variables. But now remember that here we won't have slow roll conditions, and the kinetic terms are also non-standard. So these are the equations. They look a bit horrible, but what you can extract from these, the equations for the adiabatic modes and the non-adiabatic modes, you can extract some general features. So first of all, since the brain moves along different directions, we have more than one field that actually enters into the perturbations. The entropy perturbation evolves independently of the curvature perturbation at large scales. Still, you have that the entropy perturbation sees the curvature one. And another interesting feature is that the curvature and entropy perturbations evolve at different speeds. And I think you can see this here. So this will have, may or may not have an effect because then different perturbations cross the horizon at different times. So let me just summarize what what I discussed.
And so on a small scale, curvature and entropy perturbations mix with each other, right? That's what you're saying. You're saying that your statement is that curvature perturbations seed entropy perturbations, right?
Yes.
So it then doesn't make sense that one of them has a smaller speed of, a different speed of sound than the other, because if they are mixed, they should have the same speed of sound, right?
This gamma factor, remember, is very large, so this maybe very small.
So where is the speed of, okay, so you're saying the speed of sound there, that's one, and never
this is one, and this is, well, since gamma has to be large, this actually is usually.
Okay, so there is a mixing.
Yes,
there is a mixing.
Okay.
Yeah, what's that? Whatever, I never know what that is called, but the squiggle at the end of the delta S equation, that must be related to
maybe
the psi, that's, yeah, that's
the delta sigma.
What is the psi? That's the mixing or something?
Yeah, it's related to the standard definition of the curvature.
But then there's a kn squared there as well, so that means the sum speed is,
Where is the k squared?
On the
potential. And the right hand side of the entropy on the equation of the perturbation, there is k.
There is k. Sure. So that's, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's
mean that.
At super Erasmus case, the right hand side of the entropy perturbation is.
Yeah, of course, but the speed of sound doesn't matter for super Erasmus case. Speed of sound is only relevant on a small scale, right?
Yes.
So. And I'm saying that if you cannot have two modes that are mixed and have different speeds of sound, because if they are mixed, it is propagated the same speed.
Yeah, I think it just means that if you look at the equation and you neglect the coupling, they naively have different speeds.
Okay, but
of course they will be coupled.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then you have to solve a complicated system. And probably you'll get like two modes, one whose speed is close to one and the other whose speed
is
close
to one.
You
also face at different times.
I mean, okay, so how is it like Turing coupling?
Well, you can have like effects that come in or something moving faster than the local sound.
Yeah. I just don't know what happens if you couple two things that have two different speeds of sound. I think you have something that is, you get like an effective speed of sound that's neither, probably. That's
right, exactly.
Yeah. Neither, okay.
Yeah, that's maybe. So you eventually will have to solve
it. Okay.
But we have a solid. I mean, it's not. that's the problem. So, in fact, that's part of. In fact, you can just extract some features from looking at the questions, but you will have to solve them. Where was I? Ah, yes. Yes. So okay. So we look at this B3 problem that's moving in a warp flux background with not only radially but also angularly. So we saw that the angular momentum can help in a way to get better. And it can provide some extra efforts, but it is still not enough. And you can imagine further models in which you can have universes with short or multi-stage inflationary periods. And we saw perhaps something more important is that this DBI inflation is in tension in general with the consistency bound. So. Spinflation or moving along the angular direction, in fact, does help, but it doesn't help much because it gets suppressed very quickly, the angular motion. A series of bounces can also help, but it's also not not very clear if that will be actually possible. So I guess, first of all, one would like to see if it's possible to relax these bounds. And so this is something I'm looking with Tassos, Salvo, Gustis. And one possibility is to include Wilson lines. And this may help actually to provide a better way in which you can inflate and satisfy the bounds. It will be, of course, perhaps more realistic to have a scenario where you actually include the potential for the angular fields, say. So more generally, if you have a potential for the two fields that actually enter into this motion. And of course, we need detailed analysis of the cosmological perturbations. You said you actually have to solve and see what are the effects, and also look at some more carefully at the non-Gaussianities. Some work has been started, but there's still lots of things to actually understand. Of course, a concrete calculation of the heating mechanisms in all BVI type of scenarios is still lacking. Although there's some work in general in the slow roll cases. And so I guess DBI inflation can actually provide interesting predictions, perhaps, for cosmology. And so I think it's further investigation. Okay.
More questions?
I had a question. Could you go up to those system of two equations for the perturbation? So just trying to see. You said as k goes to zero, the two modes decouple. No. I think on a previous slide you said at long wavelengths they're independent.
And so yeah, no. So if you look at when this is yes, at large scales. So yeah, this is much lesser one. This is not here, but still.
Well, that I don't believe.
You have something here.
That can't be possible because. If I wrote an action for those two systems, those two field systems, you know, both of those terms on the right-hand side are coming between the coupling. So it can't be that one is suppressed by k squared, but the other one is not.
Why do you say it comes?
The entropy at super horizon scales, the entropy perturbation avoids added
decoupling.
Yeah, that's true. No, but. In the delta sigma is still being coupled to delta f, that's what I can understand.
Okay. Is that the perturbation C, the adiabatic ones?
Yeah, but what I'm.
Yeah, but you want this suppression term.
I can't write an action for that system if one term, the coupling goes to zero as k goes to zero, and the other one doesn't. I think. My confusion is the problem is I don't know what this variable psi is in terms of delta sigma. Yeah. I think I need to see that. Maybe we can talk in a bit.
Yeah.
It's a technical point.
Yeah.
But shouldn't entropy be constant on super horizon scale? And this is not obvious here. The US term that you have there.
Yeah, it's
not so obvious. Okay, so if you have two fields, maybe then that's not true.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, I've been on for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, there's lots of time to talk.
Thank you.